A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He just moved apartments with Hannah and little Ezra, and he's using the move as a decluttering forcing function. Euro boxes, modular storage, the whole thing. But he's got a category of stuff that's perfectly functional, worth maybe $100, and selling it secondhand is a nightmare. Hours of back and forth, spec requests, no-shows, the whole circus. His example is a spare wireless XLR transmitter receiver pair. He doesn't need it, someone would want it, but there's no small electronics charity shop to drop it at. So his question is, can we systemize an approach where every friend interaction becomes a flash interview to match your unwanted gear with someone who needs it? And he wants tactics. Specific, on-the-spot sales pitch tactics.
I love this question. And here's the thing. Daniel's already identified the core problem without maybe naming it. There was a survey of secondhand sellers last year that found the average Facebook Marketplace transaction eats 2 to 3 hours just in communication, coordination, and dealing with people who never show up. For a $100 item, you're effectively working for less than minimum wage just to get it out of your house.
2 to 3 hours of, is this still available, followed by ghosting. The modern equivalent of standing in a field waiting for a duel that nobody's coming to.
The Buy Nothing Project, over 7 million members globally, still requires you to post, wait for responses, pick a recipient, coordinate pickup with a stranger. It's better than selling, but it's still passive. You're still waiting.
The existing channels are either a part-time job in customer service or a lottery where the prize is someone showing up at your door. And Daniel's got a 1-year-old. He doesn't have an afternoon to burn on. Actually, can you measure the width?
Here's the insight that makes his question so good. Friends are the ideal recipients. Zero shipping, built-in trust, you know they'll actually use the thing, and there's a reciprocity dynamic that strengthens the relationship. But you can't wait for a friend to randomly say, hey, does anyone have a wireless XLR pair? That's passive hope. What Daniel's asking for is a system of active reconnaissance.
The move is the forcing function. Once those Euro boxes settle into the closet, the window closes. The stuff enters the permanent inventory of things you'll definitely deal with someday, which is the purgatory where gear goes to die.
Let's build the system. The core unit of operation is what I'm calling the flash interview. Every friend interaction, coffee, dinner, running into someone on the street, becomes a structured opportunity to surface needs. But it has to be structured, because winging it feels weird and most people won't do it.
That's the part I want to press on. The social awkwardness is the whole barrier. Most people would rather eat the $100 loss than risk sounding like they're running a sidewalk sale at a dinner party.
That's exactly why you need a script. Not a creepy rehearsed thing, but a set of questions that feel natural and actually make you a better conversationalist. Because asking someone about their projects and aspirations is genuinely good conversation. You're not interrogating them, you're being interested in their life. The fact that you happen to have an inventory of gear is just...
the trunk inventory. I feel like we're about to enter some territory here.
We absolutely are. So here's the 3-question protocol. Question 1. What's a project or hobby you've been meaning to start but haven't? This surfaces latent needs, things they want to do but haven't pulled the trigger on. They might say podcasting or learning guitar or building a home server. You're not pitching yet, you're just listening.
The beauty of that question is, it's interesting. You're not running a script, you're asking about their life. The fact that you're also scanning for inventory matches is, let's call it parallel processing.
Question 2. What's the one tool or gadget you keep borrowing or wishing you had? This identifies specific gaps. They might say, I keep borrowing my neighbor's drill, or I wish I had a decent microphone for video calls. Now you're getting concrete. If you could snap your fingers and have one piece of gear appear, what would it be? This is the aspirational question. It reveals the thing they want but haven't rationalized buying. And if that thing overlaps with something in your declutter pile, you've just found your recipient.
You're not pushing products. You're surfacing demand. It's market research disguised as friendship.
which is a beautiful phrase. But here's the critical piece, the pre-work. Before any social event, you run a 30-second mental inventory of your 3 to 5 most portable, most likely to be wanted items, the wireless XLR pair, a spare USB-C hub, an extra power bank, a mechanical keyboard you never use. You can't pitch what you don't remember you have.
You're walking into brunch with a mental catalog, like a waiter reciting specials, except the specials are your abandoned hobbies.
When the flash interview surfaces a match, you deploy the pitch. And the pitch has to be zero friction. Here's the exact line. I have exactly that. It's in my bag. It's yours if you want it. No strings, no payment, just promise to use it.
That implies you brought the thing to brunch.
Sometimes you do. Daniel's mid-move, he's probably driving between apartments. The trunk is a mobile showroom. But even if you don't have it on you, the next line is, I can drop it by tomorrow. No photos to send, no price negotiation, no, let me check if I can find it. The offer is immediate and complete.
If they say no,
you move on. No pressure, no awkwardness. The no is data. It tells you either the item is less universally useful than you thought, or your pitch needs work. If 3 friends say no to the same item, iterate. But here's what's interesting. The social psychology actually works in your favor. There's a classic finding called the Ben Franklin effect. Franklin discovered that asking someone to accept a favor actually increased that person's liking of him. The cognitive mechanism is that the person thinks, I accepted this gift, I must like this person. By giving, you're not just decluttering, you're strengthening the relationship.
The recipient is doing you a favor by taking your stuff, and their brain resolves the dissonance by deciding they like you more. That's either deeply cynical or accidentally beautiful.
I'm going with accidentally beautiful, but it means the awkwardness is one-directional. It's in your head, not theirs. If you frame it as, I have this extra thing, you'd get more use out of it than me. You're not offering charity. You're paying them a compliment. You're saying they're exactly the kind of person who would use this thing.
The compliment pitch. You seem like someone who would know what to do with a wireless XLR pair. Which, delivered wrong, sounds like a threat. Delivered right, it's flattering.
Delivered right, it's specific. Hey, you mentioned you've been thinking about starting a podcast. I have a wireless XLR transmitter receiver pair that's just sitting in a box. It's yours if you want it. No strings, just promise to use it. That's not weird, that's attentive.
If they don't podcast, you've learned something about them, and you move on. The interview continues.
The flash interview isn't a one-shot. It's a protocol you run with everyone, and most conversations won't yield a match. But when they do, the transaction is instant. No listing, no haggling, no stranger at your door. The item goes from your Eurobox to their hands in the time it takes to finish a coffee.
We've got the 3 questions, the mental inventory, the zero friction pitch, and the Ben Franklin effect as psychological cover. What about scaling this? Daniel's got more than one item, presumably.
That's where it gets interesting. But first, let me plant a flag on something. The reason this system works is that it replaces passive hope with active, low-friction action. Most decluttering advice is about the emotional work of letting go. Marie Kondo, sparking joy, all of that. But Daniel's problem isn't emotional attachment. It's logistics. He's already decided to part with the item. The bottleneck is finding the recipient, and the existing channels are broken.
The altruistic tax. You want to do something generous, give away something useful, and the system charges you 2 hours of your life for the privilege.
That tax is regressive. It hits hardest on the items that are worth something, but not enough to justify the hassle. $1,000 camera? You'll sell it. A $10 cable? You'll toss it. But the $100 wireless XLR pair lives in the dead zone.
The dead zone. That's what Daniel's Euro boxes are full of. Not trash, not treasure. The undead inventory of the mildly valuable.
Which is why the friend network is the optimal channel. No dead zone. Just a matching problem, solved with a structured conversation. And the structure is what makes it repeatable. You're not relying on inspiration or luck. You're running a process.
Alright, so we've got the core protocol. But Daniel asked for tactics, and I feel like we've only scratched the surface. What about turning friends into scouts? What about the inventory tracking system? What about the edge case where the item is worth $500 and you're not ready to just hand it over?
All of that. But before we get there, I want to address the objection that's probably forming in every listener's head right now. This sounds like a lot of work. And the counterargument is, it's less work than a single Facebook Marketplace transaction. The mental inventory takes 30 seconds. The three questions are just good conversation. The pitch is one sentence. The whole system, end to end, is maybe 2 minutes of cognitive overhead per social interaction. Versus 2 to 3 hours of, is this still available?
The social interaction was happening anyway. You're not scheduling extra coffees to run your gear hustle. You're just adding a lightweight protocol to conversations you were already having.
It's a background process, like checking the weather before you leave the house. A tiny bit of preparation that completely changes the outcome.
I will say, there's something almost intelligence agency about this. You're running assets, you're debriefing contacts, you've got a mental dossier of items and their likely recipient profiles.
I was going to say it's like a pediatric differential diagnosis. You have a set of presenting symptoms, you run through the possible matches, you prescribe. But your version is more fun.
The Moscow rules of decluttering. Every interaction is an opportunity. Every friend is a potential recipient. Every no is operational data.
I'm not sure we should be taking operational security advice from a sloth who practices leaf medicine.
My leaf medicine is ancestral and beyond reproach. And I'll have you know sloths invented the soft pitch. We've been slowly convincing things to happen for millions of years.
Is this another one of those sloth history claims I'm supposed to just accept?
We also invented the Eurobox. The ancient sloths of Mongolia were stacking standardized containers while donkeys were still figuring out which end of the grass to eat.
The sloth heartland?
You can look it up. The records are, well, they're not digitized, but they exist in a box somewhere. Probably in Daniel's apartment now, actually.
Which brings us back to the point. Daniel's got a finite window here. The move is happening now. The boxes are open. The inventory is fresh in his mind. In 6 weeks, those Euroboxes will have settled into the closet and the mental inventory will have faded. The flash interview system only works if you run it while you know what you have.
The call to action is, tonight, before you go to bed, make a list. Top 5 items you want to offload. Write down the likely recipient profile for each one. Person who owns too many USB-C devices and not enough hubs.
Then the next time you see a friend, run the three questions. Start with the easiest item. The thing you're 90% sure someone would want. Get a win under your belt. The first successful offload is the proof of concept that makes the whole system feel natural.
After that first success, text two friends. I'm decluttering and I have a spare wireless XLR pair. Know anyone who needs one? Start building the Scout network. But we'll get to that.
For now, the takeaway is, the existing channels are broken, friends are the optimal recipients, and the flash interview is the protocol that turns passive hope into active matching. Three questions, a 30-second mental inventory, and a one-sentence zero-friction pitch. The Ben Franklin effect handles the rest.
The dead zone is dead. Long live the trunk showroom.
Let me back up and define the problem more precisely, because naming it changes how you think about it. I call this the altruistic tax. It's the hidden time cost of finding a worthy recipient for something worth, say, $50 to $200. You're trying to do something generous, give away a perfectly good piece of gear, and the system charges you for the privilege.
The altruistic tax. So, generosity has a processing fee.
It does, and it's steep. 2 to 3 hours per transaction, and that's just communication and coordination. That doesn't include the emotional cost of someone saying they'll show up at 2 and then ghosting you. For a $100 item, you're making somewhere around $30 an hour in value recovered. And that's if everything goes smoothly, which it never does.
Daniel's specific situation makes this worse. He's mid-move with a 1-year-old. His free time isn't measured in hours, it's measured in the gaps between Ezra needing something. A 2-hour marketplace saga isn't just annoying, it's structurally impossible.
So the obvious question is, why not just use Buy Nothing? 7 million members globally, hyperlocal groups, gift economy ethos. And the answer is, it's still passive. You post a photo, you write a description, you wait. Then you sort through responses, pick someone, coordinate pickup, with a stranger, who has your address. The whole cycle can take days.
Plus the emotional calculus of choosing. You post a wireless XLR pair, and 3 people want it. Now you're running a tiny guilt-based lottery. 2 people are disappointed, and you're the disappointment vector.
Electronics recyclers exist. Best Buy has a program. There are e-waste centers, but they shred things. They don't match functional gear to people who need it. A working wireless XLR pair going into a shredder is a tragedy of logistics.
Charity shops are the other obvious channel, but most of them won't touch niche electronics. They don't know how to test them, they can't warranty them, and their customer base isn't browsing for XLR transmitters.
You've got four channels, and they all fail. Marketplace is a part-time job. Buy nothing is a stranger lottery. Recyclers destroy value. Charity shops won't take the item. The common failure mode is that they all require the recipient to come to you, either physically or through the platform. You're the bottleneck.
Which brings us to the core insight Daniel's question is built on. Friends invert the whole model. Zero shipping because you see them anyway. Built-in trust because you know they won't flake. And there's a future reciprocity that doesn't need to be stated. They'll think of you next time they're decluttering.
The research backs this up. Studies on decluttering psychology show that knowing your item is going to someone you care about eliminates what researchers call waste guilt, that nagging feeling that you're being irresponsible by discarding something useful. It's the single biggest emotional barrier to letting go of functional items.
That's the thing that makes you keep a spare wireless XLR pair in a drawer for 3 years, even though you haven't touched it since the Obama administration.
Friends solve waste guilt completely. If you hand that XLR pair to a friend who's starting a podcast, you're not discarding it, you're deploying it. The item gets a second life, you get the emotional satisfaction of helping someone, and the relationship gets stronger. It's a triple win, but you cannot wait for them to ask.
Because they won't. Nobody's going to say, hey, does anyone have a spare wireless XLR transmitter receiver pair they're looking to offload? That sentence has never been spoken in human history.
Which is why Daniel's instinct is right. You need a proactive, repeatable system. Passivity is the enemy. The items sit in the Euro box until the box goes into the closet and the closet becomes a museum of abandoned potential.
The museum of abandoned potential. I feel like that's a wing of the Louvre dedicated to unused exercise equipment and duplicate cables.
It's the most visited wing in every home, and the only way to avoid building one is to treat decluttering as an active matching problem, not a disposal problem. You're not getting rid of things, you're routing them to their forever homes. If the existing channels are broken, what does a better system look like? Let's start with the core unit of operation, the flash interview. Every friend interaction becomes a structured three-question scan. The structure is what makes it repeatable instead of awkward.
Most people hear a structured interview with friends and imagine themselves holding a clipboard at a barbecue, asking about audio equipment while someone tries to eat a burger.
Which is exactly why the questions have to feel like genuine curiosity, not interrogation. Question 1. What's a project or hobby you've been meaning to start but haven't? This surfaces latent needs. They might say brewing beer, or learning to record music, or building a home server. You're not pitching yet, you're just being interested in their life.
The parallel processing is the elegant part. You're actually listening. You're not just waiting for keywords like a human barcode scanner, but in the back of your mind, you're cross-referencing.
Question 2. What's the one tool or gadget you keep borrowing or wishing you had? This gets specific. They might say, I keep borrowing my neighbor's pressure washer, or I wish I had a decent webcam for client calls. Now you're identifying concrete gaps. If you could snap your fingers and have one piece of gear appear, what would it be? It bypasses the rational, I should save up for that, filter and goes straight to desire. If that thing overlaps with your declutter pile, you've found your match.
The sequence is latent needs, specific gaps, aspirational wants. It's a funnel. Most conversations won't hit, but when they do, you know exactly what to offer.
Here's the critical pre-work that makes the whole thing function. Before any social event, you run a 30-second mental inventory. What are your 3 to 5 most portable, most likely to be wanted items right now? The wireless XLR pair. A spare USB-C hub. An extra power bank. Maybe a mechanical keyboard you never use. You can't pitch what you don't remember you have.
You're walking into every social situation with a mental catalog, like a waiter who only serves the specials, except the specials are your abandoned tech purchases.
When the interview surfaces a match, you deploy the pitch immediately. Here's the exact wording. I have exactly that. It's in my bag. It's yours if you want it. No strings, no payment, just promise to use it.
it's in my back, is doing heroic work there. That implies you brought a wireless XLR pair to coffee.
Sometimes you do. Daniel's mid-move, he's probably driving between apartments. The trunk is a mobile showroom. But even if you don't have it on you, the fallback is, I could drop it by tomorrow. The key is zero friction, no photos to send, no price negotiation. No, let me check if I can find it. The offer is immediate and complete.
If they say no?
You move on. No pressure, no awkwardness. A no is data. It tells you either the item is less universally useful than you thought, or your pitch needs refinement. If three friends decline the same item, iterate. But here's what's fascinating. The social psychology works in your favor. The Ben Franklin effect. When someone accepts a favor from you, their liking of you actually increases. It's cognitive dissonance. The person thinks, I accepted this gift from Korn. Why would I do that if I didn't like him? I must like him.
By unloading your unwanted gear, you're not just decluttering. You're running a low-grade psychological operation that makes people like you more.
I'd phrase it more generously, but yes. The act of giving strengthens the relationship, which means the awkwardness is entirely one-directional. It's in your head, not theirs. When you frame it as, I have this extra thing, you'd get more use out of it than me. You're not offering charity. You're paying them a compliment.
The compliment pitch. You strike me as someone who knows what to do with a wireless XLR pair. Delivered wrong, it sounds vaguely threatening. Delivered right, it's flattering.
Delivered right, it's specific to what they just told you. You mentioned you've been thinking about recording interviews. I have a wireless XLR transmitter receiver pair sitting in a box. It's yours. No strings. Just promise to use it. That's not a sales pitch. That's attentiveness.
If they don't record interviews, you've learned something about them, and the conversation continues. The interview isn't a one-shot. It's ambient.
The flash interview is a protocol you run with everyone, and most conversations won't yield a match. But when they do, the transaction is instant. No listing, no haggling, no stranger at your door. The item goes from Eurobox to their hands in the time it takes to finish a coffee.
Let's make this concrete with Daniel's actual situation. He's got that spare wireless XLR pair. He's at a casual hangout with a musician friend. He doesn't lead with, do you want my wireless XLR pair? He asks, ever wish you had a second wireless mic for quick recordings? If the friend says yes, the pitch deploys. If the friend says no, they talk about something else. No pressure, no lingering weirdness.
Notice what that question does. It's not, do you need this thing I have? It's, does this problem exist in your life? You're diagnosing before prescribing. It's exactly what I used to do in pediatrics. You don't walk into the exam room saying, who wants antibiotics? You ask where it hurts.
The pediatrician to gear hustler pipeline. A natural career arc.
The skills are more transferable than you'd think. But the point stands. The flash interview only works if you've done the mental inventory first. Daniel needs to know, walking into that hangout, that the wireless XLR pair is in his top 5 mental catalog. Otherwise, the friend says, yeah, I wish I had a second mic. And Daniel says, oh, that's rough. And the moment passes.
The tragedy of the unprepared declutterer. Standing next to a person who needs exactly what you have, and neither of you knows it.
Which is why the 30-second pre-event scan is non-negotiable. It's the difference between being a matchmaker and being a warehouse. And warehouses just store things. That works one-on-one. But to really clear out the closet, you need to scale. And here's where the system gets elegant. The flash interview doesn't stop at direct friends. You train your friends to be scouts.
I like it. You're not just offloading one item to one person. You're recruiting a distribution network.
Here's the line. If you know anyone who could use a wireless XLR pair, let me know. I'll hand it to you. You pass it along. You just created a two-hop distribution channel. Your friend becomes the middleman, and they're motivated because they get to be the hero who connected someone with free gear.
You're not asking them to do work. You're giving them social capital they can spend on someone else. My friend had this thing. I thought of you. They look generous. You clear inventory.
It solves the reach problem. Most people here use your friend network and think they need hundreds of friends. You don't. 5 to 10 friends, each of whom knows 5 to 10 other people, gives you reach into 25 to 100 potential recipients. That's a bigger pool than most. Buy Nothing groups are active at any given moment.
The comparison is stark. Buy Nothing requires posting, waiting, sorting through responses, coordinating with a stranger. The scout model requires one conversation, and the item moves within 24 hours, handed to a friend who hands it to their friend. No stranger at your door, no posting photos, no ghosting.
Let me give you a concrete case. Say Daniel has a spare DJ controller. I know from personal experience, this is DJ Herman Poppleberry speaking, that a beginner DJ controller is exactly the kind of thing someone wants but won't buy for themselves. It's $150, it's intimidating, they don't know if they'll stick with it.
The dead zone sweet spot.
Perfect dead zone item. So Daniel runs the flash interview on friend A. Friend A says no, not interested. But friend A says, actually, my coworker's been talking about learning to DJ. One text later, Daniel hands the controller to friend A. Friend A hands it to the coworker, and the controller is in its forever home. Total elapsed time, maybe 6 hours.
Friend A feels great. They didn't just pass along a message. They made something happen. The social capital flows in both directions.
Now, to make this scalable, you need an inventory system. And I mean something absurdly simple. A note on your phone. Or a dedicated channel in your messaging app. Daniel uses Telegram. He can create a declutter inventory channel just for himself. Every time you decide to part with something, log it. Wireless XLR pair. Musician, podcaster, video person.
Tagging each item with a likely recipient profile. So when you're at a dinner party and someone mentions they're a musician, you don't have to search your memory. You've already done the categorization work.
The pre-written pitch is sitting there waiting. You see musician on your list, you deploy the question. The cognitive load drops to nearly zero. You're not remembering what you own. You're reading from a menu you already prepared.
This is the part where most decluttering advice falls apart. It's all emotional. Thank the item for its service. Visualize it, bringing joy to someone else. Daniel doesn't need a gratitude journal for his XLR transmitter. He needs a CRM.
A customer relationship management system for unwanted gear. And here's the thing about the no. Every rejection feeds back into the system. If three friends say no to the same item, you got a signal. Either the item is less universally useful than you assumed, or your recipient profile is wrong. Maybe you tagged that USB-C hub as anyone with a laptop, but what you actually have is a hub that only works with a specific Dell model. Iterate the tag, or accept that this particular item is destined for the recycler.
The no is diagnostic. It's not rejection, it's market research. Your friends are a focus group and they're working for free.
That reframe matters psychologically. Most people stop after one or two rejections because it feels like social failure. But if you treat every no as data that sharpens your inventory profile, you keep going. The system doesn't fail. It calibrates.
Which brings us to the emotional side of this. And I know you've got research on it.
The decluttering psychology literature is clear on this point. The single biggest barrier to discarding functional items isn't laziness or hoarding tendencies. It's waste guilt. The feeling that you're being irresponsible by throwing away something that still works. That guilt is what keeps perfectly good gear in drawers for years.
The museum of abandoned potential, as we said. But waste guilt has a specific antidote, and it's not just get over it.
The antidote is knowing the recipient. Studies show that when you can picture the specific person who will use your item, and especially when that person is someone you care about, the waste guilt evaporates. You're not discarding. You're deploying. The item isn't going into a landfill, it's going into your friend's podcast setup. That emotional return is what makes the whole system sustainable.
The friend network isn't just logistically superior, it's psychologically easier. Selling to a stranger on Marketplace doesn't give you that emotional payoff. You're just relieved the transaction is over. But handing a DJ controller to your friend's coworker who's been wanting to learn? That feels like you did something good.
The Ben Franklin effect amplifies this. The recipient likes you more because they accepted the gift. You feel good because you helped someone. The relationship strengthens. It's a virtuous cycle that a Facebook Marketplace sale can never produce.
All right, let's address the edge case. What about items that are worth more? Say, $500 and up. Daniel might not feel great about just handing over a $500 piece of gear, even to a friend.
The flash interview still works, but the offer changes. Instead of, it's yours, you say, I have one of those. Want to borrow it for a month and see if it fits your workflow? It's a loan with a built-in trial period. If they love it, they buy it from you at a fair price. And because they've already used it for a month, there's no uncertainty, no spec questions, no, can you send more photos? They know exactly what they're getting.
The try before you buy model, but with zero pressure because you weren't planning to sell it anyway. If they don't want it, you get it back and run the interview again with someone else.
The month-long loan does something clever. It creates a sense of ownership before the purchase. They've already integrated the item into their setup. Returning it would be a loss. The sale closes itself.
That's the car dealership test drive tactic, repurpose for decluttering. Take this audio interface home. See how it feels in your studio.
The beauty is, you're not a car dealership. There's no commission structure, no manager coming over to sweeten the deal. You're just a friend with gear and patience. All right, let's land this plane with something you could actually do tonight. Step 1. Before you go to bed, open a note on your phone. List your top 5 unwanted but functional items. Next to each one, write the likely recipient profile. Not someone who wants this. Be specific. Person with a messy desk and too many peripherals. Parent who travels for work. The profile is what triggers recognition when you're talking to someone.
Be honest about what you actually have. Not the aspirational version where the wireless XLR pair is a professional broadcast tool. The real version. It's a perfectly good piece of gear that's been sitting in a drawer since you upgraded. The profile should match the reality, not the fantasy.
Step 2. The next time you see a friend. Tomorrow, this weekend, whenever. Run the 3 questions. But start with the easiest item. The thing you're 90% sure someone would want. A power bank. A spare webcam. Something universally useful. Get a win under your belt. The first successful offload is the proof of concept that makes the whole system feel natural instead of like you're running some kind of gear pyramid scheme.
If you're nervous about it, pick the friend who's most likely to be gracious, the one who won't look at you like you've joined a cult. Success with them builds the muscle memory. Then you take it to the next conversation.
Step 3. After that first success, text 2 friends. Not the one you just gave something to, 2 other people. The exact message, I'm decluttering and I have a spare wireless XLR pair. Know anyone who needs one, that's it. You're not asking them to take it, you're asking them to scout. And here's the psychological jujitsu. People love being the connector. They get to be the person who says, I know a guy.
Now your network is growing without you having to do anything. You're not scheduling more coffees. You're not posting on Buy Nothing. You're just letting the scout network do what scout networks do. The item moves, you clear space, and someone you'll never meet gets a thing they needed.
The meta lesson here, and this is the part that applies way beyond decluttering, is that the system works because it replaces passive hope with active, low-friction action. Most people's strategy for everything from finding a job to getting rid of old gear is put it out there and wait. Post the resume, list the item, tell people you're looking.
The waiting is the killer. Waiting for the algorithm to surface your listing. Waiting for the right person to stumble across your post. Waiting for a friend to randomly mention they need exactly what you have. It's all passive. And passive hope has an abysmal conversion rate.
The flash interview model flips it. You're not waiting for demand to find supply. You're actively surfacing demand in conversations you're already having. The same principle works for job hunting. Instead of applying to posted positions and waiting, you ask people what problems their team is trying to solve. For finding a roommate, instead of posting an ad, you ask friends what their housing situation looks like in 6 months. For sourcing recommendations, instead of posting, anyone know a good plumber, you ask the next person you see who they use.
The common thread is that the ask is embedded in a conversation that was already happening. You're not sending a blast email to your entire contact list titled, WHO wants my OD gear. You're just adding a lightweight protocol to interactions you'd have anyway. The friction is near zero, and the yield is disproportionately high.
That's the real shift Daniel's question points to. It's not about decluttering. It's about treating your social network as an active matching layer instead of a passive audience. Most people treat their friends like a billboard. They post something and hope the right eyes see it. The flash interview treats friends like a distributed sensor network. Each conversation is a node that can surface needs you'd never discover otherwise.
The billboard versus the sensor network. One is broadcasting into the void. The other is listening and matching. And the sensor network compounds. Every successful match trains your friends to think of you when they hear someone say, I wish I had a...
Tonight, 5 items, 5 profiles. Tomorrow, one flash interview, easiest item first. After the win, two scout texts. The whole thing takes less time than a single Facebook.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.